Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. My guest today is Eileen Miles. She's one of my beloved writers, and her most recent book, a book called Afterglow, is really an extraordinary book. It's a book of prose, but it involves poetic states of mind and memory and nostalgia and love, and yet in none of the predictable or sappy ways. How did you come to write Afterglow?
I mean, I think I followed my nose and I followed the relationship, you know? And I think that all the ways you have a relationship have to do with all the ways that you're a person. A relationship with an animal is like a familial relationship. And it involves many things, including fantasy and language. So I just brought what I had to the book. Well, I brought it to the dog. I brought it to the relationship. The dog brought it to me, and then I brought it to the book.
Who's the dog?
The dog is a very fine pit bull named Rosie, who lived from 1990 till 2006.
And she lived with you, and she was an immediate, right? You met her. And she was yours.
I met her in the street. She looked at me. We made eye contact. I was like, it was a compelling gaze. And I ran home to get my $50 to pay the person on the street who was selling her and was going to put her out to fight. So it was a lucky rescue.
Yeah. And she lived with you for 16 years, yes?
Uh-huh.
Through many beliefs about her. Among these beliefs was that she was your father.
Uh-huh.
Tell about that.
You know, it was that gaze, like after I brought her home, after she was my dog, after she was with me, and I just kind of kept having that like relay you have with an animal, and I just felt like this deep familiarity, and I was like, it's totally my father. And my father was a funny guy with a strong sense of humor and who I had a strong tie to. And it was absolutely the case that he would undoubtedly come back to be my dog, to hang out with me longer, because I think it was a great loss to both of us that our relationship, you know, died young. And it felt right with her. The colors felt right. Her feeling felt right. And then the life that we had felt like a life that you know, would contain him and that sort of love.
Your father was a postman.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, dogs have a relationship with post people mm-hmm. from time immemorial. And so at a certain point, the joining of your father and Rosie, they're like lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosie is your father, and Rosie is your father's reincarnation. There starts to be a sense that members of your family are sending each other magical communication through their connection with Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, Rosie goes to Ireland with you and meets the rest of the family.
Right.
And they're all sitting on the couch,
uh-huh.
you know, watching TV and eating, and Rosie is there. I have to tell you, although this may sound foolish, it also sounds so real,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds as if you found, as a practicing poet,
mm-hmm.
the language to express the inexpressible, which is what poetry does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in a certain way, poetry really operates in silence. I mean, I think so much of what we get on the page when we get poetry is something that's been held in abeyance for a long time that really has no language. You know, it's sort of the time before. And so I think a relationship with an animal, which is, again, that profound, it's awe. One feels awe all the time about the world with an animal. And so it's like the language part came after. But I think the thing that was so amazing, I mean, I had applied forever for a Guggenheim Fellowship. And it was just a thought I had in my head forever that when I got a Guggenheim Fellowship, I would go to Ireland. And so it took like 1986 to 2012 for that thing to happen. And so I went kind of obediently to my own mission. And, you know, and Rosie was gone by then. Irish families have, you know, the famous little thatched roof houses. They call them the wee house. And people tend to leave the wee house there and then just build a real house next to it because they're like little houses on farmland. I mean, Irish were, if they were rich at all, they were rich in land. And so in one case, I went to the wee house and it indeed was a dog house. It was the crazy. I was like, this is too insane, you know, and it was just a family that just, you know, were open to the fact that hunters would come to Ireland to hunt all the time and they would, you know, take a dog hunting and then they would abandon the dog. And so this particular, it was the O'Riordans, which is my paternal grandmother's family, had let the wee house become a dog house. And so there was magic all over Ireland. A writer who I love, Fanny Howe, had given me all her tips about Ireland. And one of them was to go to an abbey, the Glenstall Abbey in Limerick. And I went there and I really needed like 35 more pages. The book was largely written by then. And I just kind of waited and Rosie Spake, you know, it was kind of incredible. And she, you know, and of course, it was handy that Rosie's instructions were for me to write a tapestry. And I love tapestry. I'm very, very, very fond of medieval tapestries. And being in the UK, there were lots of them and I could do research and look. But it was like she spoke through a tapestry. She spoke the language of pictures, which is what, with, you know, illiterate people and what animals may do. And I've been told by a vet, if you need to talk to your dog, send them pictures.
The unicorn tapestry in this book is seen as, in a way, the failure of the feminine, the woman sent out to be defeated.
I think the betrayal of the feminine.
Yes. Say more.
I mean, I think the unicorn was a lure to bring in virgins, you know? And the virgin was complicit in that, in the killing of the unicorn. So it was just, it was kind of perhaps the beginning of patriarchy in a fairy tale woven fashion.
The book begins with a piece that you wrote a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's a witty piece, you know, in which the Eileen Miles of the book, my guest is Eileen Miles, by the way, the Eileen Miles of Afterglow receives a note from a lawyer saying that he represents the pit bull, Rosie. Mm-hmm. And it's a very charming young person's piece of writing.
Mm-hmm.
One can imagine reading it all over the place and having everyone be vastly amused mm-hmm. by it. And somehow the book is about falling through the amusement into the profound and the intuitive and the actual. I thought I'd ask you to read that first chapter first.
Okay. I love what you just said, though. Falling through the amusement is exactly how it feels. I think that's what amusement does. One day in 1999, an awkward hand-addressed letter appeared in my hallway. The mailman threw everything in the stairs. I grabbed the letter and headed with Rosie to the dog run, which in that neighborhood was a skimpy little triangle at 39th Street, west of 9th Avenue. It was an amazing perspective on midtown roofs and also dull traffic heading to New Jersey. My neighbors were weird, sad former actors. I liked the pink-cheeked older woman named Doris who walked every one of the neighborhood's dogs, including mine. This is like 16 years ago, so Doris is probably dead. Sitting on a bench while Rosie sniffed the ground, I tore open the strange note. It read, "Dear Eileen, I take the liberty of calling you Eileen to begin the unpleasant duty of forcing you to legally take responsibility for the damages you have inflicted over a period of 9 years upon the being you have taken to calling Rosie. I am Rosie's lawyer. Dog lawyers have only become possible in recent years, even months. Which is not to say crimes of all kinds against dogs are new in any way. Crimes against dogs are ancient and widespread, but dogs having the wherewithal to attain legal representation is new indeed. My services have been retained thanks to a generous bequest by an anonymous donor to set up a foundation in her will for the explicit purpose of identifying dogs who were likely litigants, candidates for beginning the long and arduous process of getting the ball rolling on dogs' rights. It's been clear to my client during her life, and most pressingly at the time of her death, that the best way to make this need known would be to take up an individual dog's case, not the case of all dogs, which is too ubiquitous to pursue in the explicit way the law makes possible for human litigants, who are generally assumed to be individuals. A wealthy individual, of course, does not have more rights than a poor one. We are all brought up to honor human rights, but only wealthy humans are able to use the full force of the law, i.e. obtain high-quality representation. By this logic, there can be no freedom for dogs unless there are wealthy dogs. There is one today, the dog formerly known as Rosie. She has been left a significant sum of money in my client's will. She may spend it as she pleases, with the single stipulation that she obtain counsel and press charges against her owner for a variety of abuses and crimes against dog kind. As you know, Eileen Miles, that owner is you. It seemed unbelievable to me. Rosie was about 10. I looked at her licking an empty wrapper against the fence. She appeared entirely innocent of the letter's content. "What? Are we going home?" she seemed to say. "Okay, I don't think she knows anything about this." I popped the leash back on and walked home, planning my day. The loft we lived in was right across from Port Authority. Day and night, I watched the lights of buses sail in and out of the building. I thought about the letter from time to time. I mean, for years. I showed it to people. They laughed and smiled. Could Rosie and my entire relationship be framed as blame? I did force her to have sex with Buster that one time. No, twice. Could I write a book about that? I've never been an idea writer. I have like a spurt and then I go do something else. But this would be her book. A dog book is a great idea.
Eileen Miles, reading the first chapter of Afterglow. One of the things that I love about the chapter is that it points out that you don't have to be wealthy to achieve quality representation.
You just have to wait, right?
Well, I love, this is quality representation.
Uh-huh.
This is what Rosie gets. It may not be from a lawyer, and it may not be in the form of a lawsuit, mm-hmm. but it is in the form of quality representation. Wherever she goes, she is given a special way uh-huh. of being seen and being described and being present. And that is what makes it Rosie's book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is. It's a dog's memoir, and the dog has the great good fortune of being given consciousness of every kind. It's a real surprise because you expect, you know, the book that we've been getting recently, not bad, but sentimental books about dogs, usually their death. This dog, this is the afterglow.
Mm-hmm.
She's alive after her death, and she is glowing, and somehow or other, my foolish heart continued to be stroked
mm-hmm.
by Rosie. And it really was an extraordinary risk for a book. Were you aware of it?
I mean, I thought this was an opportunity to look really dumb. I mean, this was an opportunity to really betray my tribe and not, I mean, it's sort of like, as a poet, sort of on the fringe of the avant-garde, but in that world, I feel like I've always been a little bit more of a storyteller, or a little more narrative than some of the poets that I've hung out with in my time, you know? So there was always a way in which I felt like I was in a bunch of work. And I write prose and I write fiction. But I feel like this one will really throw me out of the park of experimental writing. And But I think the thing that's really funny is that everything, whether it's a love or a dog or a book, you never know what anything is when you embark on it. You never know where it's going. You never know where it's going to take you. Because I just wanted, when I began, I just wanted to do something fierce. I mean, the beginning of the writing was just really sitting in the yard with a dying dog, just doing what I know to do, which is to start recording when I feel something. That's my impulse. I start inventorying. So I was inventorying, 2006. I was inventorying her dying. I was inventorying George Bush, the politics of the moment, and there's probably 50 pages of going forward. I thought, oh my God, that dog God, that joke. I can run with that, and to start inventorying God. But her dying only took so much space, and then I had the whole problem of the rest of the book, And I think that's the magic of being a writer, is you just become your own teacher in a way. You just give yourself prompts.
Do you think the book ended up fierce, or did it calm you down?
I think it satisfied me. Truly, of course, my dad died when I was 11, and I've been kind of mourning him all my life. And I was a child, and I had no idea how to handle loss, how to express loss, how to say how I was there. And so I repeatedly have been writing about my dad, and thinking he will always come up in things. And so, but by being with this dog, a dog life is a mini life in terms of human, right? You could have five dogs in your lifetime. So it's sort of like you could have five opportunities to see existence come into being and go out, and not say, oh, my child died before I did. That's wrong. The dog always dies, mostly always dies before you. And so I got to mourn fully.
You had a Rosie and not an idea. Mm-hmm. That allows you a phrase like that.
Right.
To see existence come into being and go out. I mean, that's so great. You were made to be a poet so that you could talk casually like that.
The thing that's funny about this, I keep thinking that I didn't make up the dog, but I did make up the book. And so in a way, too, it's the meeting of those two things, the making up and the there is, just the essential being of the animal. The first time I told my dad a joke and he laughed, I just understood the power of humor, And so, too, it's an homage to a dog and it's an homage to a man. And it's also how I would make an homage to that man who was a postal worker, is to make him laugh, And so the joke the book takes so many turns. And then incidentally, instead it dedicated to my mother, who just died in April. And so I was saying, and she loved Rosie. She really loved Rosie. And she is the woman who wouldn't let me have a dog when I was a child, but she really got. In fact, I have a stepsister, and so I had to write her when my mom died and say, my mother died. And my stepsister wrote back, and she said, and I don't know if she knew about the book or not, but she was like, your mother really loved Rosie. And she goes, you know what your mother said about Rosie? And I was like, what? And she said she had pretty feet.
Oh.
I thought, that is so crazy. And then I'd kind of look at her feet and picture. I was like, they are pretty.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Eileen Miles about her book, Aftergo, a dog memoir. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Eileen Miles about her latest book, Aftergo, a dog memoir, about the heartfelt bond with her dog, Rosie, and how through a myriad of experiences, we find ourselves able to process intimacy and grief. You've written much tougher things, much more sauntering, swaggering kinds of things. This really won from the heart.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I mean, it was what was there too. It was like I didn't have the option of writing that other book. I mean, also it's like you've written that book. Part of being a writer is just like you just keep moving. And I, you know, I'm not opposed to writing a new version of something I've done before if I can see how that's possible. But this was definitely also, it's like I've never claimed the term memoir, and that was really fun to take this word, which I've always thought of as sort of hokey and sentimental, and apply it to a subject that really is sentimental, you know, and then figure out, now that I've put myself into that space, how can I claw my way out of it, kind of. And so that was part of the adventure. It's just like, what would a weird, punky, loving dog book look like? What would it have in it? You know, and every single thing was just a new directive. I mean, when I moved from San Diego to Los Angeles after she was dead, I had a box of her stuff. And then I stuffed it in the closet in L.A. And then before I left L.A., I pulled the box out. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do with this stuff? And I just, again, did what I knew. I just took a picture of each thing and I wrote about it. And then I threw most of the stuff away, you know. And so there's like a chapter that's like a dog will, I think. You know, each thing that was Rosie's. But also like a little bit like the, you know, the internet or a website where you just click on each thing and you don't know how much it's going to hold.
It's also... No, it's one of the pleasures I take in your work. You take on the old-fashioned role of the wandering bard, and you go from place to place, and things get left behind, and other things get taken on to the journey,
mm-hmm.
and it's marvelous. And she is speaking in honor of a dog companion
mm-hmm.
who traveled with her.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, I don't know, it's as, pardon me, it's as sweet as pie. I love it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I want to be on a journey like that.
Right, right. Well, a dog journey is wayward, too. I mean, a dog is just following its nose. A dog is not linear. So it's that thing where if you put a dog in the middle of your life and follow it, it will take you. I mean, my current dog, I mean, you know, I have a place in Texas, in Marfa, Texas, and she just ran off for 4 days. And she's a pit bull. And what was she doing? She was herding bulls on the ranch land. They were like, who is this little yellow, this golden dog? And we're just like, I don't know, honey likes the big game. This is a whole other story. You know, which I don't think I'll write. I think I'll just live. But I think it's kind of like these beings take you places. And I had to find out where those places were and let the book follow that path. So I had no idea in a way. I mean, there's a lot of theosophy in this because, well, one, I think alcoholism is a huge topic in the book, too. My dad was an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. So I've thought a lot, long and hard, about what that means. And when I was younger and I would go on the wagon, I didn't know what to do with my mind or my time. And there was a great bookstore in New York in the 80s, an occult bookstore called Weiser's.
Oh, sure. And Samuel Weiser's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. They had all this weird theosophy, these blue books called The Discipleship and on Annie Besant. And
yes.
I read all that stuff.
Oh, God,
when
me
I was
too.
I was trying not to get drunk, but I would just stay in and I think smoke pot or, you know, and drink tea and read these. And sometimes you wonder, you've read all these books in your life and where do they go? And when I started to write this at various points, there was somebody else speaking and I thought, that's not me and that's not Rosie. Who is this character? And it was this theosophist, you know? And I thought, that's just so wild that I contain that too. And
yes, no, thank you very much, because that's what I mean. The book goes in and out. It's not just dog love. It's mm-hmm. philosophy. It's the return from beyond the life that we live.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sharing. The here are these tough Irish women in America, and here's Rosie joining them,
uh-huh.
acting as sort of a shepherd to the tough Irish women. And I don't know about you, but my dad was a kindly Jewish man. He wasn't a man of great daring, but he was a man of great heart. And it sounds like your father was too. And that feeling of letting the female dog be a male dog, letting the male father be a female dog, mm-hmm. letting my father be the sweetheart that he was. And I was so grateful to have a mother for a father and a father for a mother. My mother was a businesswoman.
Right, right.
And we, in these relations with our dogs, these presences who are just speaking to us about the realm of possibility, mm-hmm. of what might be and what is, this is wonderful.
And it just broadens the category of what trans is. I mean, we've been living with that for a long time. I mean, I first heard about the transmigration of souls, metempsychosis, yes. in college. I was like, what's that?
Oh, good for you, Eileen. Absolutely. Wow, yes, transformation. Mm-hmm. Transformation of the biggest and littlest sorts. Because the words are transformative, too. As you said before, Rosie spake. You know, we hear from our familiars, and they speak in what language they have chosen to teach us.
Mm-hmm. And then a book is a funny kind of singularity. I mean, it's that thing where, like that text you mentioned, that letter from the lawyer. I mean, I wrote that in, like, 1999. There's another chapter in there called The Rape of Rosie, which is a total disgrace. I've only read it once. The room was horrified, because it is horrifying, even if it's funny. What we do to animals is bad. But that was when I was running for president. She was kind of my running mate. And it was just so easy to put her on buttons and say, unchain your dogs of war. You know, people have actually come to readings with Rosie campaign buttons on their chest, too. But I wrote the rape story when I was running for president, and just wanted people to know what kind of candidate they had, you know, in front of them.
I mean, it's a beautiful, 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 beautiful book. It's a pleasure to read. And, you know, the pleasure doesn't end or begin with its subject matter. It really is exploring its possibilities of telling. And what better can a book ultimately do than to know something new about how to tell?
Mm-hmm.
It really gave me great, 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 great joy. I've been talking with Eileen Miles, author of Afterglow, a dog memoir, published by Grove Press. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Afterglow, a dog memoir, at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm. He is a bookworm. She is a bookworm. We are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm, when Ron and Russell Mayle of the rock group Sparks are our guests.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.